Minnesota basketball fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast. He's Aaron, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss some Minnesota basketball. Timberwolves is what we're going to pretty much rely on for content. Are you content with the Timberwolves? I'm not. Content for the show today. Obviously, we'll dig a little bit deep into a variety of subjects. We will start with, I guess he's going to be our guy for a while anyway. We'll see. A-Rod is buying the team with a couple other people, especially two folks. So we're going to get into, you know, we knew the thing was for sale. It sounds like it's a 2.5 year plan. They got a system in place. Yada, yada, yada. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll start the show with that. And then we'll talk about a variety of things that have gone on since the last time we did a show. There's been some close calls. I think we have, what, two wins since the last show, which is about 10 days ago, give or take. And there's a couple of items that we are going to address. When you look at that Miami victory, very complete team. Oriented victory. When you look at the two games without Cat, wow, that was ugly. And some of it makes sense with certain lineups we're playing or whatever, but man, that shit is ugly. We still got these first quarter blues that we'll address as well. J-Mac, we're going to have to make a decision on J-Mac here in the off season. A variety of things that we'll talk about. Before we get to Okogie and Vanderbilt are adding, you know, some defensive toughness. And dare I say, you know, I'm not gonna jinx Okogie. I'll read some stats later, but I don't want to jinx them. But yeah, we're gonna dig into this stuff, and then a little bit later, Gopher stuff. We did add some more players to the squad, but we won't go too deep in that. If this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadope radio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Ropeadope if you don't want to. We have a variety of places where you can find it. You can find the show Living in Loserville under the Ropeadope Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found almost everywhere. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, football, boxing, baseball, everything in between. And a couple of months ago, Aaron, my co-host here, started a new page, Living in Loserville, on Spreaker. There's a variety of content that comes out of there. He did a mock draft, a second part to a mock draft. He's already done two of those over there. So definitely check that out. Once again, Living in Loserville on Spreaker. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69 a month. It's simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere on any device. The cloud DVR is available as well. And for right now, if you upgrade to a choice package, it'll give you a free month of HBO Max. And for a limited time, for the rest of the season, the NBA League Pass Premium, and the season still goes for another month because it started so late. That's AT&T TV. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Aaron. Obviously, this area, the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, whatever, you know, the surrounding areas, whatever. I mean, it is a weird, to say it, you know, without using a better term, pretty intense time right now. Locally, how are you doing in general, Aaron?
In general, I'm doing well over here in St. Paul, kind of avoiding all of that mess over there. I mean, I don't know much about what's going on in Minneapolis from other than what I see on the news, and see a lot of military presence, and I see some chaos going on over there. So, and I'm somewhat thankful to be in St. Paul, but other than that, we had a weird, I just didn't see it coming, Chris. We had talked off the air, I think last week, a little bit about, God, we just hope that, you know, Taylor sells the team And little did we know that there was something in the works already. And I was shocked to find out who the potential group to buy the team was going to be. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Well, the selling of the team, we've known that for quite a while, that he was, you know, I guess, setting appointments and, you know, having little conversations and whatnot. There was kind of a long list. I guess you could throw him into that, A-Rod and company, we'll call it. But yeah, not a lot of folks thought that that would, you know, some of it was kind of on the low for the last like four or five folks that were pretty close to buying it per se. It sounds like Taylor has been a dick about it. and in this case, it's probably pretty good. I mean, just to give a little detail of the process, which, you know, it's kind of interesting. It has an emphasis in the short term of staying here. Mm-hmm. You do have to join his little group as a minor percentage holder for 2.5 years, which is basically like 2 years, you know, next 2 years, until you gain full, you know, ownership of it. So he is taking his time, and it is kind of funny to hear him. Well, you know, I really want to be, I can teach people. I want to tutor people. And it's like, you want to teach people how to be an owner? I mean, hell, your investment to save the Timberwolves was phenomenal. No doubt about it. $88 million. And actually, to save it, I want to emphasize that. He did save it. No doubt about it. But, you know, the $88 million to turn it into $1.5 billion, that's why you're a billionaire, dude. You did your thing. But other than that, I mean, I don't know how much you could teach at a high level when it comes to decision making over the years. And make sure you don't tell them to kick, you know, somebody in the ass like Garnett on the way out. Please don't do that. But anyway, yeah, it was kind of an interesting choice.
And Chris, you know, just to break in here, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, the whole 2 year period, because is it like a probationary period? Is that a period where Glenn's going to see how well the new ownership is doing and then possibly reclaim the team? I don't understand the 2 year thing. I don't understand how that can be written in. Is giving him a chance to change his mind, or for the potential buyers a chance to change their mind? Or it doesn't seem like something that's done in business that often. So I tend to be a little skeptical of the, you know, I don't know the language of it, so I can't really say.
Well, no one knows the language because it's not finalized.
What's the point of it? You know, it doesn't seem to me to have real any point. You're going to sell it, then sell it. If not, hang on to it for 2 years. It just kind of seems kind of, I don't know. I don't get it.
Well, it's really hitting home. He's going to do his best, whatever that may be. To say, hey, dude, like over the top as long as you can, right? Because there's no, you can't tell someone they can't move the team. There's fees and stuff, and obviously there's a lot of costs and stuff, but not the way some of his recent quotes don't really line up to where it's a $2 billion fee that you'd pay. Well, who would you be paying the fee to? So it's more like, hey, dude, this is how much I mean it, and I'm going to try to do this. But also it's got to be ego as far as, well, I'm just going to let me groom you and all that type of stuff. And you know, so I think it's really his way of putting his best foot forward of, hey, guys, I tried to keep it here as much as I could.
Yeah.
I went down the road as much as I could. But also I'll say this. If you look at the market size, a lot of people say small market, but if you look at the market as far as sports market, it's a lot higher than people think. And the NBA wants to expand, but they don't want anybody to move. They've made that outwardly. Seattle and Las Vegas are the two places they want to go, but they want it to be a new team, not a transfer. They want to keep it here. So there is going to be a lot of yellow tape, red tape to get through.
Maybe that's what the 2 years are, you know, give the league a chance to expand and Glenn still have his hands on it if they attempt to move or something to that you know, something down that way.
It plays into all that. It's like, hey, man, let's build up minor trust as much as you can, you know?
Yeah, and overall, I don't really care if it's Alex Gonzalez or the other guy who buys the team. I think everybody just kind of wants to be assured that the team will stay. And there is really no assurance at this point of that being the case. So I think a lot of Timberwolves fans in their Timberwolf fan way have already decided that the team is moving. And I think it's probably, what would you say, 50-50 at this point. With the expansion, it's less of a chance of moving. But if there's no expansion, I could see something. I did overhear on one of the talk shows this week, they were talking about possible move, and they had Alex Rodriguez he's not liked in Seattle at all. He's hated there. So
the way out was really bad.
Yeah. And so they think that, you know, the possible theory is that he would move the Timberwolves to Seattle to kind of write his name in Seattle. And that's a long shot, but I guess it's plausible. I could see something like that being the case.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be just to make him feel better, or I want to be liked in the place or something like that. I mean, he went and got his money. You know, it was an ugly, you know, ending to that, no doubt. I think a lot of people are, like you said, just paranoid and say, well, Seattle needs a team. They want a team. Well, you know, it's not just a done deal either. Yeah, I don't even know what to put a percentage on it, to be honest with you, because I think, like you said, over the next 2 years, we got to see the league expand in that type of thing. Ever since hockey got into the NHL got into Vegas, that was like a no-no for so many leagues, and all of a sudden that happened, and now there's two major pro, you know, teams. So they definitely want one there. They definitely want one in Seattle just because of the market. But like I said, the sports market is like a 14th or 15th ranked in the country, and the listenership, even radio, just that, is nuts here. People don't realize that either. So it comes and goes. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, it is. In some ways, it's like anything's better than Taylor. That was like the only good thing Taylor, would do is keep it here. But yeah, I don't really have an opinion on a percentage 50-50 or not, because we really got to see. I mean, really, I think a lot of it could play to this team right here in the next 2 to 3 years. If they can build a winner, that shit goes away. You know, it goes away quick, because all of a sudden viewership goes up, tickets go up, blah, blah, blah. You start to get a winner, people start to go, hey, let's get a new stadium in 3 years. We can get a new stadium. Well, they'll stay for sure then, you know. So that'll be, I think, the biggest thing in the next, say, 5 years is the expansion, and see if that actually happens. And would they be willing to have a new arena to make it profitable if, in fact, you do, make a winner and whatnot. Anything else on that?
Well, you brought up the arena, and I didn't even factor that into the discussion at all. And I mean, that's a whole tempest in a teapot there. I mean, you're going to have essentially the same fight that we had with the North Stars and with the Vikings. They're going to try to get the city to build them something, and that could go horribly wrong and add to, reasons for the club to move. Or, you know, you could buckle and try to build an arena, and then they move anyway. I mean, that's a whole nother thing, but it's definitely a huge component of whether they stay or whether they go.
Yeah, the build new arena, though, that I don't see that happening, because the investment that it would take from them to, even though we could say public funding, no doubt, but if you look at the Twins and if you look at Ziggy, how much money they did actually put in there, considering some other cities like L.A. Or even Nevada, they paid more than people think. That's a whole separate debate, is should public money and all that. Another thing, though, right now, with that stimulus, a lot of we're in healthy shape that way, like real healthy. So that plays into it too. In the coming years anyway, as far as, well, shit, we're going to be okay. You got to pitch this in, we got to pitch, you know, all that dumb shit, but yeah, that plays into it. There's no doubt about it. Speaking of playing into it, I want to start with the role players. You know, when you look at that Miami game, for instance, that victory, definitely, you know, the best overall team victory. Horrible start. We talked about those first quarter blues. It was 37-26. But the second unit as a whole stepped up big, 35-24. So it was tied at half. It was nice to have Cat back in that game. That's a big welcome back, Cat, again, from, you know, after he missed two of those games. He did end up falling out late fourth quarter, though. But Nas, 16 points, 9 boards. Vanderbilt, 14 rebounds. Hernan Gomez, 14 and 6. Rubio had 17 points, shot 5 of 10. Okogie was very solid. 7 players in double digits. The role players are really starting to glue in some of these games anyway. The Miami victory, though, was very solid. And Okogie and Vanderbilt of late have been, you know, improved play. And they're just a key for defensive, you know, a defensive role.
Yeah, I mean, defensively, those are your two defensive stompers. And you have, like, I really think you have a case now where you're seeing your role players have defined roles, Chris, and they're, you know, doing their best to fill those roles. I mean, Kogi's, you know, he's in the starting lineup at times. Lately, it's been pretty often. As I can't think of any other reason than to have some defensive presence on the floor. Vanderbilt off the bench, you know, offensively has some punch to him at the power forward position and is a good defender. You have Jaden McDaniels, who's a good defender. So you're starting to see a bit of a defensive identity start to emerge, and you're seeing it through role players, leaving Cat and those guys to focus on offense. Even Ricky's steals numbers are up again, and he's always kind of been good.
He's been aggressive with that.
And turnovers. And he's been aggressive overall, really. He's been aggressive this last stretch. And, you know, I really like what's going on here, but I don't want to – with Cat out, we saw what happens, you know, when Cat's out. And then we see him come back. So we're starting to see, you know, the definite change in the way the team plays. And Nas is not Cat. But Nas does a great job. I think we need a little bit more offensive player there that could match – defensively with him, but I really think that you're starting to see role players fill roles now, and they're assigned roles now, where I think with Saunders, it was a bit of, you know, he didn't really know what role to put them in, so they didn't know how to play, so they all thought that they could, you know, be scorers or whatever, but now, you know, Okogie stopping people, like you said, Nas is out there, defensive presence, McDaniels plays kind of both ways, two-way player. And then Vanderbilt also is a good defensive presence. So you have some offense, you have some defense, and you get a result like you did in Miami.
Yeah, and it's a nice combo to put next to Cat. Nas is big, you know, for that offensive big man off the bench. Him and Vandy are a nice combo off the bench. With, you know, maybe next year that's what actually we're going with. But, yeah, either way, I liked what you said about the roles are more defined now. The rotations, they're trying to stick to them. And like we said the last time we did a show, I like how about maybe 3 of the starters will probably close, or at least 2 of them, but they're going with what's hot. They're going with the matchup. And since the All-Star break, knock on wood, Okogie is shooting 50% from 2-point land, which is, he's not going to be great from 3. We know that, but sometimes it's frustrating because when he goes to the rack, he'll just try something where you're like, dude, there's 3 guys right there, Okogie. But he's not doing that lately. He's really kind of picking his spots. He's actually hitting the corner 3. He's, I think, 39% from the 3 since the All-Star break. Not the longest stretch, but pretty damn good. He's getting to the free throw line. So it's been nice to see him activated. And it's a player you root for, you want on the floor. It's just sometimes Saunders did turn him into sitting on the, you know, on the 3-point line so much on offense where you're like, well, dude, you know, let him set screens or something and let him play off stuff and just don't have him parked up on the 3-point line because nobody's going out there, dude. You know, so I do like that a lot. And even in those games, and I think the coach said it in the presser, after that Miami game, even though those two games without Cat were garbage, Vanderbilt and a couple guys still played pretty good. And let's address some of that. You know, they were blowouts pretty much from the start, early and often. But without Cat, if you look at that starting lineup without Cat, and I know he wanted to keep his rotation, and I'm cool with that because we knew it wasn't – Cat was hurt and he was going to be out for extended time. It was just two games. And so we knew, okay, let's see, you know, whatever. We're not going to mess up the whole thing. Right now, let's keep the rotations. But, you know, without Beasley or without D'Lo in the starting lineup without Cat, you know, that's a lot. That, where's the firepower? Edwards, that's about it. And then when they can just cue on Edwards the whole time, he's still really young. That's, you know, anytime you can cue on one guy, you're going to be able to contain somewhat anyway, or at least contain the team from winning. Maybe not the individual player. We saw that with KG a lot. So I think the starting lineup had something to do with how bad they were at the start, because it's a weird lineup without a lot of firepower. And if you're not running everything through Cat, it's still kind of a starting lineup that needs a little more firepower, but without Cat, it gets ugly. So I hate to like say, oh, we'll just chalk it up to that. But some of it was just that. And if we had to go the next month or something, or the rest of the season without Cat, I think we tweaked the lineup. So I think that played into it a little bit, but yeah, I mean, Cat is showing, like you said, his importance, in a variety of ways. Last night though, that Clippers game, once again, got down 27 to 17 pretty early, with like under 3 minutes in the first quarter. Nas was really aggressive, him and D'Lo, in the start of when they came in. And it was 29-26, and then, you know, they made 5 of 6 field goals, and it was like, okay, here we go. And then a couple bad shots, couple wide open misses, and they hit like just a bunch of threes. They went on a run of 8 of 10 threes with still a couple minutes left to go in the quarter. It was like in the second quarter, you're looking at it 46-33 after a 10-0 run. And then after that, I think literally till like the 4 minute mark, they were 8 of 10 from three. 24 points that quick just off threes. That's going to hurt you. So I really felt like that's where the game was lost.
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly where the game was lost. And what are you going to do? Hot shooting moment for the Clippers. I think there was some defensive lapses in there, but you know, you go up 24 points off three pointers in the third quarter, and then you come out in the third, Chris, and you score, you know, 16 points to their 32. Right. It's ball game at that point in time. And it wasn't for lack of effort. I thought they gave good effort. Cat was back, and you know, you get 23 out of Edwards, which is what you're getting out of Edwards now, about 25 to, you know, 20 to 25 a night as a rookie.
That's well, too. He kept playing hard.
And that's impressive. He played 29 minutes, and you're getting these kind of minutes for everybody's another thing. And then if you go back to your Kogi point, you know, he's a guy that needs a role. And I think the years prior to this is trying to figure out what that role is. Like you said, Saunders would have him do a bunch of different things, where I think Finch has him in a role now, and it's allowing him to get 23 minutes or so a night, be effective in what it is that he does, to defend, you know, shoot open shots and so on, and be good in transition. That's what he does. And now he has a role, and you're starting to see the minutes go with him. But the Clipper game, Chris, it was just like, we got to stop this coming out so flat. I mean, that's something I think you learn as a team, of how to get yourself going, coming out to start a game. But they haven't figured that out yet, and they're still digging themselves holes in the first quarter. And last night was a perfect example of why you don't do that and what happens when you do.
Yeah, it just consistently happens. And sometimes the bench has saved us for a couple minutes and got it back in there. And then the starters, all of a sudden, they wake up and then they play great the rest of the thing, the rest of the game. That's happened too. But without this second unit, I'm not sure we would have gotten. And I'm talking all five guys lately, those two wins. They may not have happened without that. Like I said, the team effort and whatnot. Another thing I'm noticing is getting to the free throw line. The Boston game, 30 times, 27 of 30. Miami game, 29 times. Indiana game, 40 times. Sacramento, 28 of 33. The Sixers game, 31 of 36. Shit, with the Bulls game, They were 25 of 25 from the free throw line. I really, really like that. We got some really – I mean, Rubio is getting to the line too. He's 5 of 5 last night. A lot of folks getting to the line, and they're hitting them when they get there, and we do have some pretty good fall shooters. So the fact that it's easier buckets, you don't have to work to get them as much. And then also – you can set up your defense. It's not a missed shot, and then you're on the run. And we know the transition defense has been pretty bad. But the overall aggressiveness, like you said, with Rubio, of course with Edwards, definitely with Nas, you got to like that they're getting to this free throw line, win, lose, or draw.
Well, success breeds success, Chris. I mean, if you're exhibiting effort, you're in most ball games, you're not crying to the refs, and you're making hard plays to the basket, you're going to get calls. You know, you don't have to complain about calls if you're doing the things that would get calls, such as, you know, making moves that you wouldn't see. Like, Edwards is going to be a star. He's going to start getting calls. That's going to happen. Rubio used to get beat up. Now he's starting to get calls. Why? Because the team's a little more successful, a little bit more competitive, and they're starting to do things that teams that are competitive do. Therefore, you get more calls. So, like, it's exponential, you know. So you do this, and now you start to get calls. So now you get free throw opportunities, which adds points, gets you in games, keeps you in games, et cetera. Let's hope that continues. But I really feel like that's a consequence of effort and of a style of play instilled by the coach that'll allow the referees and almost force them to make calls. When, you know, the 5-6 calls that wouldn't have been called a year ago are now starting to be called, and that's leading to more free throw attempts.
Yeah, and also, like you said, I mean, there's so many whistles and timeouts and little times where you can, where play is stopped, go over there and then talk to the ref. Like we said last time, Garnett would scream and run and sprint down the floor sometimes. Like, there's times... plenty of time to talk to the refs. Just don't do it right after you missed the damn shot or whatever, and now all of a sudden it's 4-on-5 the other way, and your guy's just sitting at the front going, all right, dude, I'm all up. You know, that shit gets old, and we are starting to see.
Well, and you got two – you have two – let's say you have one official star and two possibly with Ant and Kat. So those star players get calls. The only way they don't get calls is if they're on terrible losing teams that are uncompetitive and don't seem to care. Or, you know, they're box stuffers, which, you know, guys like Kevin Love wore and stuff, and he would get calls. But I really think it's the change in play. It's the competitiveness, and it's the, you know, going to the hoop strong. You're going to get a call.
Yeah.
You know, that type of change in attitude, change in philosophy, change in personal play is going to lead you to get calls. If you're lackadaisical, don't care, and you whine to the refs, you're not going to get some calls that you probably should get. I still don't think Kat's getting all the calls he should get or will get, let's say if they had a winning record. But Ant's going to get those calls, one, because he's going to the hoop so much, and two, because his star is rising.
Well, and some guys are just, let's face it, some guys are just great at drawing fouls. I mean, Sam Cassell was the master. Even Russell is not athletic really at all. I mean, relatively speaking, the NBA, but he just finds this little crafty way to create contact. And like you said, if you're aggressive and you're creating the content and not over the top, of course, you're going to get more calls, no doubt about it. And some guys just have a knack for it, dude. They just have a knack to get fouled off the bench, starters, whatever. Just some guys are really, really good at it. Obviously, James Harden has that little swoop under move that just works to perfection. A little note from last night, the Wolves now tied for second worst in NBA history, by the way. 1 of 14 after a victory. 1 of 14 after a victory. And a lot of it is tied, well, a couple things, obviously, defense, you know, offense, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of it is tied, I believe, to those poor starts, the first quarter blues. And some of it is not going to go away. Some of it is, though. Some of it is the current, you know, the way the starting lineup is right now, too. It's not necessarily a blend of the, like, it's not a great offensive lineup. It just isn't. But like I said, it works when we blend and play like 8 to 10 guys a fair amount of minutes and whatever, 2 or 3 like Nas or like you said, Vanderbilt or D'Lo, you know, playing those last 4 to 5 minutes of a game. That's important too. But if you can close well, there's a good chance you can start well too. So I think some of that is just, it's not necessarily like next year. I don't think that'll be the starting lineup next year. So some of that will be taken care of just off that. And we've seen, like I said, some of these bench players come in and make an impact. And next thing you know, the game's tied. So, and this kind of all ties together. That's kind of what I wanted to talk about a little bit. Well, first of all, I want to say Edwards, we've talked about him a fair amount. I mean, the efficiency, the better shots and the, you know, just less shots now that D'Lo is back. So he doesn't get as many. And let's remember, that's also why he, when D'Lo and Beasley went out for those 12 games, he had to shoot more. It was trial by error. And we talked about, hey, I mean, yeah, you know, 21 shots to get 24 points is bad. But the highest one he's ever had now in the last 6 to 8 games is 21 shots. But he shot 11 of 21 that game. He's had 9 of 16s, 8 of 15s. He's really starting to tighten up his efficiency. And that is a great, great for him, especially being so young. Any more on the Edwards or efficiency or anything before we get to our guy J-Mac here?
I just wanted to say that, you know, when we talk about them losing games after wins, you know, and you're talking about the lineup a little bit, Chris, and it brought a thought to my head was, you know, the kind of, let's say you get behind, you're down typically 10, 12 at the end of the first quarter. Now to get back in the game, you're going to have a certain offensive lineup, right? Well, that offensive lineup is not very good defensively. So now you're trying to gain points, but you're giving up points at the same time, which, you know, extends whatever run you could make to get back in the game. And this is kind of one thing feeding on, you're right, all those things are connected and interconnected, where if you could just come out and either stay even or get yourself a lead quickly, that changes all your substitution, that changes all the way the feel of the game goes. And right now we're kind of getting caught in that wheel of, you know, catch up, which is something a young team will do. And so I'm not too worried about it. I think next year when they have a little chance to get themselves together, get the team solidified, get the offense and the defense in, you know, then you start to get on a win streak if you can, and, you know, then start positive things start to build on each other as opposed to these negative things that are kind of in a wheel right now. You've got going, you know, it's like when you're a losing squad of any type, you know, you have to, it's a slow change to become a winning one. And I think I'm seeing that process. I don't know if you see it as well, but we've been kind of pushing aside as Timberwolf fans for quite a long time because, you know, a little bit of this and you see a glimpse of that, but then it fades away. But I start to see incremental steps of like, okay, the losing habits are starting to disappear now and the winning habits are starting to come in. And this, I want to see that continue. I know there's only a few more games left in the season, but hopefully that can go through the offseason and into the next season, maybe get some winning streaks where good builds on good, and then it's a whole different story.
Yeah, or just win. When you lose, win a game then. You know, if you lose 2, okay, you got to win a game now. You know what I mean? It's really those 3, 4, 5, and that's something we'll say. We haven't gone on the 7 and 10 necessarily, you know, under him, especially when more of the full team, we've never had a full team, but more of the full team is back. And 2 games ago, Edwards was the highest he's ever been. And we know plus minus can be a flawed stat, but when you lead your team that game, it's a pretty good chance that that's good. And it was plus 19 in that victory. So that, and like I said, he took over in spots, and we talked about how, you know, this guy could do that and that guy can do that. And to have the threat offensively of 3 guys down the stretch just makes everybody, It's just easier. Rubio said that the other day. You just need guys that can take over for 6 minutes or whatever, or at the end of the game. It just makes everything blend so much better. And we've seen since Cat came back, you know, Rubio's game come up. But J-Mac, by the way, We got to make a decision on him in the offseason. Yeah. He's a free agent. Keep him, let him go. You know, are we ready? And I think this plays into how they're keeping the lineup how it is, because they want to see more of J-Mac anyway. Because what are you going to do, win some more games? We actually want – unfortunately, we want to lose more games right now, but we want to win. It's a weird scenario. But to either have him as the – and when I say long-term, that could be 2 to 4 to 6. There's no 8-year deals anymore and stuff like that. So a 3 or 4 year is more long-term if you think about it, especially with his core and whatnot. But either being a backup or just being on the team as a reserve in some form or fashion, whether he gets more minutes or not. What do you think of J-Mac in general? And do you see him on this, or do you want him on or see him on the squad? Because he's going to come fairly cheap, you know, as a reserve or a backup or, you know, whatever combo.
I like him. I think he's the – well, I mean, Ricky's a good pure point guard, but it's a different type of pure point guard when you get J-Mac. And I really think, Chris, it's all going to come down to the draft pick. Like, you get a high draft pick, there's guards there that you're probably going to look at. Will change the way you think about McLaughlin or not. Let's say you don't get the pick, then I think you do keep him, and I don't think it's even a question, because then you go Ricky and McLaughlin are your point guards, and then you have kind of a tweener with D'Lo, and then you have, you know, your two guards. So I think a lot has to do with what happens with the draft pick. Do I like him? I've liked him since he started with the team. He's a good little point guard. I think he has some value, but I think he's more of a side trade piece if that was something you were looking to do. But yeah, I mean, that's really what I think of it is. If you have a chance to draft a Suggs, then obviously you're going to draft a Suggs, and you got to make room for him. Or another point guard, whatever the case is. And there's a kid in Europe who, you know, I think he's more of a forward, but he can play the point a little bit. They drafted either last year or the year before, but you know, until he's beaten out, I don't really see any problem with keeping him around.
Yeah, even if it is just a reserve. I mean, we know what he can do. Last year, I understand he scored more, but we had less shooters and scorers, you know? So we were asking him off the bench, especially, and he got some starts in there too, to do that more. So yeah, this year he's not scoring as much, but he's still able to penetrate, get fairly deep in the lane and dish, and he can score. He can go all high off the glass. I've said that a bunch about him. I do like his finishing skills for such a little guy. But J-Mac, I do want him on there, but you're right, man. I mean, if it's Cunningham or Suggs, he's probably not, you know, maybe as a reserve, like a third, you know, that'd be dope. I'd love him to be a third. It'd be good in that scenario if we got Suggs. Another thing is, this is how it all ties together, just to add D'Lo in this mix too. The poor offensive starts the first quarter. You see the moment D'Lo and I'll put in Naz Reid on this because it's evident those two. They do spark something, whether that means both of them need to be in the starting lineup or just one of them, whatever the case may be. They have sparked the team a fair amount, even with 3 or 4 minutes to go in that Celtics game that went to overtime. They went on a 13-2 run. They were down 11 with 2:42 left, and Russell and I think Reed got in the game. Boom, it's 13-2. Now, I'm not saying we're going to go and win 50 games with those two, but that plays into this whole thing because, you know, if you look at Rubio, as we know, can't play the off guard, can't play shooting guard. He's a starter. So, and we did see now, we know Cat wasn't there and we know he was out of shape, but we did get like 20-ish games of him off the bench, and it was bad. And if you think about it, shit, I mean, unless you surround him with shooters off the bench, you know, that's awesome, but then there's no J-Mac. So you can't play them two really on the floor consistently, and that's why this D'Lo thing has worked. I also think that's why I know he's still on a minutes restriction. He just played his first back-to-back, yada, yada, yada. There's actually a quote from the coach about D'Lo and his plans and whatever. But right now, I think not just minutes and not just how the team's – I think how the team's playing too and the rotation sticking to them and just having consistency like you mentioned, which we did not have. But he likes that. Okay, let's see. Why not these last 15 games? Why not play J-Mac off the bench? Why not? You might as well get as much on tape as you can to make your final decision. And the only way you can do that is if D'Lo doesn't start, because you can't if you can't play Rubio in J-Mac on the same floor for longer than a couple minutes or a minute or two. So I think some people have been saying D'Lo needs to get in the starting lineup because of these first quarter things, and I understand that. He has been a spark off the bench. Him and Nas have been, we're better all of a sudden when they get in there offensively. And both of them have their issues defensively. We know that. But I think the way it goes, why not let D'Lo is the one that said, don't worry about it, I'll come off the bench. That's what Kat said. So why not let J-Mac play these last 15 games?
I'm right there with you. I mean, it gives, you know, Russell a little bit of time to heal, you know, finish out the season coming off the bench, you know, get ready for next season. I think that should be the theme. Obviously, you don't want to do that explicitly with 15 games left, but you want to say, okay, he's coming off these injuries. What would it be like to have him for a whole season? Maybe if we give him a little bit of limited minutes for the rest of the year, it might, you know, do us some good next year. Get to take a look at J-Mac a little bit, see what you like, what you don't, what can you do with him. If you plan on moving him, you know, then he's got some tape, like you said, for other teams to take a look at him. Like, we got him off the, you know, off the trash heap, and we, same with Naz Reid, and they turned out to be quality players. That's something that we always looked at Houston when Rosas was down there. But where do they find these guys, you know? And so now we've kind of got that benefit going for us. Vanderbilt's another one of those guys who've come in and played a great role. Could be a move piece at some point in time. But I really think you don't stress out. It doesn't matter if you win, you know, a bunch of games that's coming down the season. Of course, you want to play well and you want your system to be more ingrained. But if you get a chance to take some wear off of Russell and see what J-Mac can do, I think that's a win-win.
Yeah, and why not let him go in the offseason healthy? You know, that health is a big thing for this team this year, obviously. And why not? I mean, when we saw Cat, you know, hit knees, it was like, oh, tell him he's not hurt. He didn't pull anything, did he? He didn't tear ACL. Like, I was like, no, please don't happen now. Just let him finish the last 15 games. But, you know, obviously the counterpoint is, well, Rubio's gotten about 25 games to start with Cat. Let's see 15 games, since this is probably going to be the starting lineup, him and Kat. Why not let D'Lo and Kat get going? So I understand that. This is what Dana Moore had a couple of things to say.
Well, before you go to that, just add this point real quick, is that Ricky's, what, 31, 32 now? I mean, at some point, he's going to get diminished minutes at some point just to maybe prolong his career. So you want to look at J-Mac for that as well. And you also want to – you know, Ricky's role next year is probably, hopefully, you know, if you can get one of those top point guards coming out. I guess I'm getting to the point here, Chris, where how many more starter years does Rubio have? How much more is he capable of doing? I think you'd be in a much more comfortable place to have him as your number two point guard.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm not sure where Ricky fits in this whole thing. Next year, he has 1 year on his deal left. So we're going to see. And also, the opposite way is we'll keep Rubio in the starting lineup because that's where he plays the best. So his trade value continues to at least even out from the start of the season till now. Well, that could be the thing. Well, if you want to start him, this, that. Or if you got shooters, it's different. If you don't have a backup point guard or your backup point guard gets hurt next year, and I'm talking about a playoff team, then Rubio can – I'm not saying he can't play backup. You know, some folks are going to take that like, he can play backup. Yeah, he can, but just not if you want to see J-Mac, he can't. He can't play the two guard. But I see D'Lo being the starting point guard next year personally, unless we were to tweak something. But I don't see Russell coming off the bench next year. But this is what he – Dana Moore had a little question to – the head coach there, and he says, Finch says the long-term plan, which is obviously Russell, to get to the point where he can start and finish games, and I think that was some of the minutes thing, because that is the thing. If you start him and he's hot, do you really want to yank them then? Like, at least off the bench, you know, okay, these are the 6 minutes you're playing. It would kind of suck to be in a flow as a starting, you know, and then where you can say, well, we know we know you got 5 minutes left this game, so we can play you the last 5 minutes, and that's what they've been doing as well. But he said the long-term plan is Russell to get to the point where he can start and finish games, but Fitch likes the Wolves' current rotation, specifically D'Lo and J-Mac pairing. So that should clear it up for some folks. But when you look at that, 9 games or 10 games now, it's crazy to even say 10 games. They've only played together. But in the lineup, they're averaging like 119 points per 100 possessions, and D'Lo, Edwards, and Cat are averaging 136 points per 100 possessions, which is a game. You know, limited to like 80 minutes or something like that. But it's pretty funky. It's like, wow, you add two defenders to that. Now we're cooking with grease. But yeah, it'll be interesting. But like I said, right, the thing you first said was the draft. And I really think it has to do, you know, where we're going to go with that draft. Any other Timberwolves items before we spend a little time on the ghost before we shut this thing down?
No, I guess I have one. It'll be interesting as this offseason progresses. There's going to be a lot of unanswered questions going into next season as far as, you know, what do you want to do with Russell? You know, who's moved in the offseason? J-Mac's role? Okogie, where does he fit in? You know, there's going to be a lot of questions. You know, did we happen to get a power forward out of someplace? So, I mean, there's going to be a lot going on. It should be exciting to open up the season next year. Don't want to fast forward too much, but I think that's kind of what we're all looking at this point.
Yeah, and we will close after we do next Monday. Hopefully, we're going to do the Vikings Purple People Eaters, you know, Vikings draft, and then the following Monday after the draft, we'll try to, or, you know, whenever we can do it within our schedules, we'll get that, the post-draft. And then we'll get back to the Timberwolves for, you know, probably two shows or something like that. And we will break down, obviously, the need. You know, we have some power forwards we like, no doubt about it. Are they starters? And can they – it's not that they're not starters, but, you know, if you can go get a solid rim protector, you go get a solid rim protector. Yeah, we'll get into that, though, like you said. One more thing, though. In fourth quarters, this was a couple days ago, last six games, offensive rating was number one, defensive rating was 14, and the net rating was second in the league. So, you know, some of that is coming back. It's funny, though, before we were losing, we were building up leads and losing them. Now we're getting down early and then coming back. It's real funky. How that's worked. But, man, with Cat on the floor, we're +7 in 656 minutes since the All-Star break. Without him on the floor, -102 in 261 minutes, which is pretty freaking crazy, man. You know, we're adding teams. We're adding teams. Well, we might as well add a whole team. We're adding players, which is a whole team. To the squad, the Gopher squad we're talking now. In the last chapter, as he announced, Peyton Willis, who was a solid guy, I understand why he, you know, had to leave because it was kind of a logjam at his position. But he's coming in as a 40% three-point shooter from good old Charleston, which is a good squad. No, we're starting to add guys like this and hometown guys, and that guy's back. And, you know, it's a tough situation, and nobody really thought that many people would leave. But based off the coaching move, there's not a lot of confidence in him, especially if you got a year or two left. It was pretty interesting to see, though, that Mashburn, like you said, hey, it'd be different if people followed Pitino. Well, young Jamal Mashburn Jr. did reunite in New Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, I figured somebody was going to do that. I didn't think it would be Mashburn, but then logically, I guess that is the best place for him. I don't know how Pitino worked that out, but, you know, is there any more news on anybody else that's signed off, because I didn't even catch the Mashburn news. I kind of just heard it now. But
Yeah. There's a hometown kid. Thorson or whatever? Hometown kid, D2 dude who, like, six different decent sized schools actually were trying to get. I don't really know much about him though, because he did play at a different level, but I can't remember his name. But we got him.
I just met guys that were in the former Gophers in the portal.
Oh, okay.
And they signed other places and.
Iowa State is where Gabe's going. Okay. Cyclones, which is nice. He's not in Iowa. And then what's his toes? Where did he go? He went. I just can't remember it. I can't remember who went. But someone else went.
Guys coming in.
Big Ten contender.
Okay, so you got Peyton Willis coming back. Something named Parker Fox from Northern States coming in.
That's the guy.
And there's
actually some decently high profile teams after him too.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be a weird team next year. I mean, we're not going to know most guys on the team, and it's going to be a hodgepodge of a bunch of guys that he's going to be able to put together, and hopefully they can win enough games and not, you know, go in the tank completely. I think he got another kid. A couple Minnesota kids came from smaller schools too, but I don't have their names at this point in time. I think one's a guard and one's maybe a shooting guard or something. But now, you know, it's going to be interesting, man. I don't know what to think of it really. It's just going to be a really odd team. It'll be one of those teams that we remember as, you know, kind of this quilt work, patchwork squad put together. And, you know, I guess we'll see what he can do as far as team building goes. But I'm sure they'll, as soon as they get some 2022 recruits, they'll be plastered in the paper and you'll see these names, because that's kind of what the future is leading toward.
Oh, and oh my God, it's like once he's gone, you just forget his damn name. The big, what the hell? Why can't I think of him? The freaking
Liam Robbins. Liam,
he went to a small school to follow his
uncle.
Like, not even, it's like mid major ish. He went there.
Yeah, that's weird. I think the NCAA should look into whatever's going on there, because that's weird. He comes from a really small school. His uncle somehow aligns with Patino in Minnesota, comes up, plays well in the Big Ten, and then decides to go back down to a smaller school.
Like, he's great. And, like, what the hell's the – why don't you want to develop in the Big Ten, dude? I don't get it.
He'd fit in perfectly in Iowa.
Then, I guess. You know, it's just weird. But, hey.
It's weird. This whole program is going to be weird for a while, Chris. I mean, hopefully it's not weird for too long. But looking at what's coming next season and what we're seeing coming in the transfers, it's going to be a good team to watch just because you're going to want to familiarize yourself with who's on the team.
I just, like you said, hope we don't pull a Les Deckel type deal. Not putting Johnson and Les Deckel together. But like you said, I mean, this team is going to be, you're going to be veteran-laced, but it's going to be funky. But, you know, if he could actually somehow have even a minorly decent season, that would actually give me some confidence in him. Like, hey, dude, you actually just had the book thrown at you. You had to do all that. You had to get, like, 9 new players. So we'll see. Any last words before we shut this thing down, sir?
No, I think we covered a lot. Follow us on Instagram at Living in Loserville. Follow us on the Spricker page. Leave a like at Living in Loserville as well. Like Chris said, we're going to get to some Viking stuff with the draft coming up here soon. So I'm excited about that. And definitely get back into some Timberwolves later.
There we go. Enjoy the week. Let's hope good things happen with that jury. Peace.